We've got it.
This transmission is coming to you.
Waging war on corruption.
All right, you want to go?
It's Alex Jones, coming to you live from the front lines of the info war.
It is Sunday, April 22nd, 2012. Welcome to the Alex Jones Show. This is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, filling in for Alex today and bringing you just a whirlwind of breaking news on many different fronts. This is going to be a very exciting show, an information-packed show. Also going to be featuring in the last half hour of this show, about an hour and a half from now, an interview conducted with Senator Rand Paul by Alex Jones himself. That looks to be a fascinating interview. You don't want to miss that. Make sure you stay tuned for that. In the meantime, today we've got breaking news about vaccines causing seizures in babies, eating the brains of babies, even while doctors tell parents to ignore the symptoms. And they now have a way, they call it the five S's of the things you're supposed to do to your baby while the vaccine is causing them to lose brain matter and undergo a seizure. You're supposed to do these five things to them and ignore the symptoms of the vaccine actually causing brain damage and perhaps causing autism. We've also got news coming up here about, Department of Homeland Security, yes, their purchase of up to 450 million rounds of 40 caliber hollow point ammo. Now, that story has been covered here on InfoWars and the Alex Jones Show, but we've got a new angle on that. We've done the math on it. We've talked to some experts who've actually been on active duty in the theater of war in the Middle East, and we've come to find that that is enough pistol ammo for DHS to wage a seven-year war on the American people, because that's domestic ammo for domestic use. It's actually illegal to use in an international theater because it violates the Geneva Convention. So that article, details about that are going to be coming up. We're going to be breaking that down. We've also got details about Pepsi's next generation product. It has less sugar, more chemical sweeteners in it. We'll talk to you about that, why it may not be a very good choice, but they're desperately trying to reduce high fructose corn syrup in their drinks in order to make them more palatable to consumers. But in the process, they're putting in more chemicals that have a questionable safety record. I've also got some more comments for you on the Hunger Games. I actually read the two books that follow the popular movie, The Hunger Games, two books that follow that, written by Suzanne Collins, and it turns out she is someone who is very much aware of the tyranny of government, and in her book, she talks about the rebels overthrowing their corrupt capital. And I'm going to go into that and bring you some details from her book commentary that will leave no doubt in your mind about the fact that The Hunger Games is a book of patriotism, of restoring liberty and freedom. That's an interesting angle that hasn't yet been covered here on InfoWars.com. We've also got news about an NSA whistleblower that says the agency, the NSA, has copies of every email of every American, every email that's been sent over the last several years, perhaps even a decade, over 20 trillion transactions have been recorded by the NSA. 20 trillion. That's phone calls, that's emails, that's text messages. The government is building a massive database of everything that you say, all of your interests, all of the words that you use, and this is on top of the search terms that you use when you might search at Google. This is on top of being recorded when you go through an electronic toll booth, as they have in Texas, where we are right now, and other states all across the country. Every time you go through a toll booth, that is an automated electronic surveillance system that tracks your vehicle and your location in real time, and they can use that combined with your emails, combined with your cell phone text, combined with your phone calls, combined with your financial transactions to build a very powerful psychological profile of who you are, what you're doing, what your interests are, and what your next action might be. In fact, they're working on predictive algorithms right now to predict what you are going to do next. I bet they can't predict what I'm going to do next, though, because I have here a baby bottle with a 7-Up logo on it. We're going to get into the history of the advertising of sodas to infants on the show here on the Alex Jones Show. Stay with us. We've got so much more straight ahead. All of that news, the details, plus John Rappaport, our guest, right here on the Alex Jones Show. This is Mike Adams filling in. Stay with us. We'll be right back with all that and much more.
You are listening to an InfoWars.com frontline report. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
It is Sunday, April 22nd, 2012. This is
the Alex Jones Show. Austin, Texas, transmitting worldwide. It's Alex Jones.
Yeah, this is the Alex Jones Show. Mike Adams filling in here from FEMA Region 6, as the bumper just said. That's absolutely true. Here in Austin, Texas, we've got an incredible show lined up for you today. Lots of news, breaking news on the DHS purchasing up to 450 million rounds of 40 caliber hollow point ammo. I know that story has already been covered, but we've got a new angle for you on that right here on the Alex Jones Show. Additional news about vaccines eating your baby's brains while doctors encourage you to ignore the symptoms. So let's get right into it. Let's start with the first issue right here, which is the Department of Homeland Security buying up enough ammo to wage a 7-year war against the American people. Several very important points you need to understand about this. Since this story broke about the ammo manufacturer ATK being awarded a contract by DHS to provide up to 450 million rounds of ammo, I've done some more research on this. I found some testimony of a major general, top brass in the U.S. military from 2004. I also spoke with some of my contacts who have been in the theater of war in the Middle East. And it turns out that even during Operation Iraqi Freedom, during an active war zone, active battle, U.S. troops, according to this testimony from a top major general in the U.S. military, around 5.5 million rounds of ammo were fired each month. Now, that's all kinds of rounds of ammo. That's pistol ammo, that's rifle ammo, and much more. Now, with the DHS purchasing 450 million rounds of 40 caliber hollow point ammo, that's enough ammunition, if you were to put that in the frame of about 5.5 million rounds a month, that's enough ammunition to wage a 7-year war just from the pistol ammo alone, not to mention other contracts where they're purchasing, let's say, 5.56 ammo for rifles, or 308 ammo, or other battle ammo for rifles, which there are other contracts out there to purchase all of that ammo as well. But here's the important point to know. The ammo that they have purchased is hollow point ammo. Now, hollow point ammo, and I've actually brought a sample of this ammo in here just to show you. Now, this is perfectly legal ammo that I have at home. This is a hollow. Oh, here we go. For those of you who are listening on the radio, you can see this on PrisonPlanet.tv. This is a 40 caliber. Here we go. 40 caliber hollow point round. As you can see, it is hollow in the front of it here versus, let's say, a truncated tip or a full metal jacket tip here. These are both 40 caliber ammo rounds. One is a hollow point, one is truncated. The hollow point is designed, by the way, to cause more trauma, to cause the target of whoever you're shooting, which is why law enforcement chooses this ammo, or people choose it for self-defense, it causes the target to suffer more trauma, more bone breakage, we've got some rifle rounds here to show you it by comparison. But this ammo is illegal under the Geneva Convention to use in war. Illegal. So you cannot use this outside the United States. The ammo must be used domestically in order for the U.S. to abide by the Geneva Convention. Now, they might say, well, this is for training rounds, but that can't be true. Nobody buys hollow point for training rounds because they're too expensive. They're a lot more expensive. Just to show you some relative sizes here, this on your screen, if you're watching at PrisonPlanet.tv, on the far right is a 9mm round. Next to that's a 40 caliber. Next to that is a 40 caliber hollow point. And to the left is a 223 Remington, or similar to a 5.56 military rifle round, full metal jacket, which is legal under the Geneva Convention. It doesn't have a ballistic tip. And next to that, the largest one on your screen here is a 308, which is used by snipers in the military, as well as other rounds, 338 Lapua and so on. The point is, the 40 caliber round has a very similar bullet diameter to the 308. So this is a round that is used by police to bring down bad guys very, very quickly, to shatter their pelvis, for example, to shatter their spine. This is actually taught in police training classes. If there's a bad guy that's killing innocent civilians in a scene, you shoot for their spine to bring them down. You shoot for their heart their lungs to cause massive bleed out trauma to eliminate that threat as quickly as possible. This is everybody out there who's law enforcement knows that what I'm saying is absolutely true in the way that you're trained. So the question remains, why would the Department of Homeland Security want to buy 450 million rounds of this kind of ammo, which again is enough to wage a potentially a 7-year war on domestic soil against the American people? That's a very disturbing idea. Very concerning to me as someone who preaches the de-escalation of violence and the peaceful resolution of any kind of conflict or disagreement. I can only say that I hope that we can peacefully and diligently restore liberty, restore law and order in this republic before Department of Homeland Security gets an opportunity to use its bulletproof booths, the roadside checkpoint booths, its new ammo, its hollow point ammo, its new assault vehicles that look like massive bulletproof, almost out of a comic book or something, cartoonishly overbuilt assault vehicles with Department of Homeland Security written right on the side. I'm very concerned about what the government is thinking. Why does it need to purchase this ammo? Why does it need these assault vehicles? Why does it need these bulletproof booths? What do they know that they're not telling us? Because remember, if you and I go out and buy, let's say, 5,000 rounds of that ammo, we might be called someone who's stockpiling or someone who's hoarding ammo or someone who's maybe even a potential domestic terrorist because we have ammunition. But when the government buys the ammunition, well, they're thinking of something. Something's got to be in their mind. I can't claim to know what that is. But that's the story I have for you today, that analysis. That story, is that posted on Infowars.com yet, guys? I know it's up on Natural News as of this morning. Okay, that should be up on Infowars later today. We'll see how quickly that gets up there. Anyway, I wanted to show you that ammo because I think it's important for people to understand the difference for those of you who may not be familiar with hollow point versus full metal jacket. Now, moving on, because I don't want to focus on that disturbing story anymore. not a good story for a Sunday, is it? By the way, I'm wearing the InfoWars May the Truth Be With You t-shirt. Oh, here we go. Off, you can see it. What a beautiful gradient logo here. Obviously, it looks a little bit like Star Wars. I love this shirt. You can get these at the InfoWars.com store. It's one of the many shirts and DVDs that are available there. All of them help support this broadcast. There you go. InfoWars, May the Truth Be With You. Absolutely, yeah. One of the last remaining strength, bastions of truth and strength in the alternative media today. Let's move right into vaccinations. We've got a couple minutes on that before the next break. Check this out. Remember when they said that vaccines don't cause seizures? They said that for years, even while InfoWars and Natural News and other organizations were reporting, hey, wait a minute, these vaccines are causing babies to go into seizures. And some of them are dying. Some of the babies are ending up in the hospital in comas. Some of them end up paralyzed. This is fact. This is happening right now. Well, the vaccine industry and all of its paid off doctors and vaccine pimps all said, no, it's not possible. Those vaccines couldn't cause those seizures. It's just not possible. If they were causing that, we would know about it, they say. Well, it turns out, not only do they cause these seizures, but now the medical system admits that the seizures are being caused by the vaccines. And now they say you're supposed to ignore the seizures because that means the vaccines are working. Are you getting this? All right, there were no seizures caused by vaccines, they say. Now they say, oh yeah, there are vaccines, but the vaccines are good for your baby. The seizures are good for your baby because they show the vaccines are working. Now they say you're supposed to show these five S's when your baby is suffering from a seizure and the brain is being eaten by the mercury and the formaldehyde and the other chemicals in this vaccine. As your child is suffering and their neurology is going haywire, they're actually burning out their brain, you're supposed to do these five S's as a parent. The five S's, they are, believe it or not, swaddling, side position, shushing, swinging, and sucking. Sounds like a bad weekend in Vegas to me, but that's what they're telling parents to do to their babies when they're suffering from a vaccine seizure. It's true. We'll have more details on that. Plus, another death of a baby after 9 vaccines in one day, all that and much more right here on the Alex Jones Show. Stay with us. We'll be right back with much more.
We now take you live to the Central Texas Command Center and the heart of the resistance, rallying patriots worldwide. You're listening to the Alex Jones Show.
Yeah, we're back here on April 22nd, a Sunday. I hope you're enjoying your weekend as we move through 2012, the year that many people think something is up, something interesting is going to happen. I tell you, every day something interesting happens. Just looking at the news, I'm sure if you follow the Alex Jones Show and Infowars.com, you're seeing a lot of interesting things happening. We just covered this DHS purchase of 450 million rounds of hollow point ammo. You got to wonder what that's for. Now we've been moving on to the vaccination story, where doctors are now telling parents to ignore the symptoms of seizure when their babies have seizures after receiving vaccines. Now they say that's good for your baby. Doctors are also saying you should drug your baby before they receive a vaccine, give them painkiller drugs so that they don't show symptoms of feeling the pain, and you should put them to sleep. Let them sleep and use these five S's technique that we talked about before the break, and just let your baby just get their brain eaten away, basically. I hope you realize how astonishing this is, that in civilization today, the medical establishment is so wedded, so invested in their vaccine mythology that vaccines are good for you. It's like essential nutrition, that your immune system couldn't even work without these vaccines. They're so invested in that idea that even as it comes out that vaccines are killing babies and causing seizures and maiming children and hurting even many teenagers and adults and senior citizens as well, even as that news comes out, they have to now spin it and say, well, that's good for the baby. Remember that news clip? It's been played here on InfoWars many times about, I don't know if it was a local TV news affiliate that said the mercury in vaccines is good for your baby. Mercury makes the vaccines work better. Oh, yeah. Yeah, inject a little mercury. It's actually very, very good for you. Anyway, at the bottom of the hour here, coming up in about 10 minutes or so, we're going to be joined by John Rappaport from NoMoreFakeNews.com. He'll be giving us a little more detail about what this vaccination information means. So we'll come back to that story. Moving on, I wanted to cover this. The Hunger Games has been a very popular movie out there. And as I hinted earlier, I've gone ahead and read the following two books called Catching Fire and Mockingjay. These are books by Suzanne Collins. They're actually written for more of a younger audience, but they've become kind of a big popular movement to go watch this movie, even among people who are into patriotism and into freedom and into questioning their governments when those governments become tyrannical. And there's been a lot of speculation about what kind of person is Suzanne Collins? Is she saying we should be in favor of liberty? What's the message, the hidden message in the book? Well, it turns out that after going through these two books, it's very clear her position. In the following, the two books following the movie The Hunger Games, and there's a slight spoiler in here, the rebels from the districts, and it turns out there are 13 districts, not just 12, they do overthrow their corrupt government. The Capitol gets completely overthrown, and the president, Snow, who was played by Donald Sutherland in The Hunger Games, he actually dies as he's about to be killed in the overthrow of the government. And there are some very important messages in this. Suzanne Collins, she talks about the districts forming a republic. So when they overthrow the Capitol, their idea is to have a representative form of government. In the commentary about her book, she also talks about the three things that are common in mythology throughout history that led her to write this film. And that is, number one, ruthless government. And she refers to Rome as another example of that. In fact, she refers to Spartacus, and she says Spartacus is reflected in the Katniss Everdeen character that is the star of the Hunger Games. She also talks about the Roman gladiator games, and she specifically uses the phrase bread and circuses in the third book of the Hunger Games. And she talks about how Spartacus started an uprising and then challenged the corrupt government there to work to bring liberty to the people. She talks about this ruthless government always forces people to fight to the death, and that's what we're seeing more and more in corrupt governments around the world, and then that's used as a popular form of entertainment. And specifically, she asks these questions. She says, when you look at government today, What do you think about the choices your government is making or other governments around the world? She asked, what is your relationship to reality TV and your relationship to the news? And she says that her Hunger Games was kind of a combination of reality TV and news combined, which is a lot like what we get today, this sort of fictional construct, this hologram of fabrication that the White House tries to spin for us. The movie has much in common with that. And then she asks, was there anything in the book that disturbs you that reflects things in your own life? She's essentially asking you to look around and look at what's happening in society today, to question government, to question reality, to stop watching the TV and the reality games and get out of the bread and circuses mindset and start thinking about the real world around you. Now, she's not been doing interviews, Suzanne Collins, the author, and I believe Alex Jones was hoping to get her on the show, but her publisher said that she wasn't doing any interviews with anyone. But it's very clear that we don't need to. Her book says the whole story. She is pro-liberty. She supports the idea of a republic. She sees the government as being engaged in bread and circuses. And she is against over-oppressive, tyrannical governments. And she understands it. She understands that the Capitol ends up becoming this parade of these ninny, cosmetically modified, genetically modified, total miscreants who have no... They don't know reality. Meanwhile, the 12 districts provide all the food, provide the coal, provide the manufacturing base. And it turns out that the so-called peacekeepers in this film, you know, the peacekeepers, which are really the Capitol soldiers, they come from District 2. So the peacekeepers are actually recruited from the public, which is exactly what we're seeing today with the TSA. Yes, the TSA is, I think, the peacekeepers from this film. And the TSA, of course, is recruited from everyday mainstream perverts, you might say, some of the most bizarre people who are still sort of mainstream people. And they are then recruited to oppress and hammer down on the common people and let them know who's in charge and strip away their liberties and so on. So all of that is going on today. Now, let me make a prediction here, by the way. When we talk about the 450 million rounds of hollow point ammo and the DHS, and then we talk about the TSA, and then the Hunger Games, they all have something in common. The common thread is that I believe we're going to see the TSA in the next few years being armed. Yes, just like the peacekeepers in the Hunger Games were armed and then used against the people. Today, I believe we're going to see the TSA agents who will actually be armed and then used at these roadside checkpoints, and they will be the new brown shirts in America. And you got to wonder why. Why is that the case? Why the TSA? Why give them guns? Precisely because they don't have law enforcement training. Because your average, and they don't have soldiering training. A typical soldier is going to uphold the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. A typical soldier has ethics and morals. A typical law enforcement officer understands the basics of fundamental human rights. I know there are some exceptions to that, but fundamentally they get it. And so the TSA has been created as a new police force, oppressive agency to bypass basic law and order and sworn oaths of office. And they're going to be armed. They're going to be the peacekeepers, just like we saw from the Hunger Games. A lot more straight ahead. Stay with us on the Alex Jones Show. We'll be right back. Yeah, we're right here on the front lines of the InfoWar in my InfoWars t-shirt today. InfoWars, may the truth be with you. Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is Mike Adams filling in today for Alex Jones on the Alex Jones Show, Sunday edition live on this April 22nd. Hope you're enjoying the show. We've got a lot more coming up for you. John Rappaport is joining us in just a couple of minutes here. In fact, we've got him online, but I want to cover this first. There has been some controversy about, let's say, an ad put out by the Kraft Corporation. This was an ad created by their public relations agency, and it shows an infant breastfeeding and holding up an Oreo cookie. So while the infant's mouth is occupied with the breastfeeding action, the hand of the baby is holding up the Oreo cookie. The message to me, when you look at that, is that I guess the Oreo cookies are just as good a nutrition as human breast milk, which is an absurd statement trying to make these two things equal. But the Kraft, by the way, you can search that. Just search online for Kraft Foods Oreo cookie breastfeeding if you want. We're not going to show it here because we just don't want to take part in that sort of, I don't know, this sort of corporate porn that they're putting out. Remember the deal last week with, what was it, HBO put out that story about the four-year-olds? I'm not even going to go into it. But this is breastfeeding with Oreo cookies. But I went into my museum, right? I have a museum because I am the health ranger. I collect all kinds of memorabilia of advertising and props from the history of junk food advertising. And I brought in here today into the studio a rare print from 1953 by the 7-Up company showing the advertising of 7-Up to infants, well, toddlers in this case, and young children. And I also brought in a 7-Up baby bottle. I'm going to show you right here. This is a baby bottle. There we go. You can feed 7-Up to your baby with this 7-Up branded baby bottle because high fructose corn syrup, let's remember, is really good for babies, just like vaccines. Give them more seizures, and that's good for them. Of course, I'm being sarcastic. Let me read you from this ad. Go ahead with that overhead shot if you can get that. And you can watch this on prisonplanet.tv. But here's the ad for 7-Up. It shows a baby in a sailor hat with a bottle of 7-Up. Right here, and it says the all-family drink. Here's the text. Fresh up with 7-Up. Looks like your skipper orders nothing but the best, sailor boy. That's kind of creepy-sounding text right there. Yes, Mom knows sparkling crystal-clear 7-Up is so pure, so good, so wholesome, that folks of all ages, even tiny tars like you, can fresh up all they like. And then it says, get a family supply of 24 bottles, buy 7-Up by the case, or get the handy 7-Up family pack. And the slogan is, you like it, it likes you. How's that for creativity from the 1950s? You like it, it likes you. I'm cracking up at some of this stuff. I'm gonna bring some more ads from the museum. Here's another ad from the Museum of Junk Food History. This is from 1955. This isn't about infants, but just another ad to show you that I'm collecting these things. And some of them are fascinating. You should see all the marketing to infants and children. In any case, I want to bring in John Rappaport from nomorefakenews.com to comment on that issue. And then let's get into the vaccine seizures of babies and why is it that doctors are saying seizures are now good for your babies. John Rappaport is, of course, from nomorefakenews.com. He's a researcher, a journalist, a really intelligent investigator, and he's hosted the Alex Jones Show before as well. John, are you with us today?
I am, Mike. Great to be here. Yeah, you like it, it likes you. I grew up with that. I remember it very well. And, you know, it's one of those things that used to stick in your mind. I mean, it really would. You like it, it likes you. Okay, you like it. Let me have a 7-Up.
Really?
Boom. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Oh, man.
That and the T-Zone. For smoking. You got some of those ads in the museum?
I haven't collected smoking ads, no. Just the junk food ads.
A doctor in a white coat?
No. But I've seen that. So, you know, doctors recommend Camels more than any other cigarette.
Lucky Strikes, Camels, yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is what's going on today, John. We've got, in our world today, the corporations are marketing poison to children. The vaccines are probably, of course, the best example of that. Now, the 7-Up marketing to children probably stopped a couple of decades ago, well, at least in the blatant way that it's shown here. But the vaccine marketing is in your face right now today. What's your latest information on the vaccine front, John?
Well, the government is still trying to deny, of course, that there's any link to autism, despite the fact that it's been shown that they actually paid out 83 parents of children, brain-damaged children, and the brain damage from vaccines. And these children all had autism. So they've actually paid it out, linked to vaccines. They've as much as admitted that there's a link, while on the other hand, the PR machine keeps rolling on and saying, oh, there's no connection, no problem, and everything's fine, and vaccines have nothing to do with autism. So this is just sheer, it's lying,
But how long can they keep this up, John? It's clear that the truth is getting out there. Even Donald Trump went on Fox News and said his own employees took a baby, got multiple vaccines. 3 hours later, the baby was autistic. Even Donald Trump, and he's in favor of vaccines, and he's speaking out against it now.
Well, they're running out of room, Mike. What can I say? You know, all they can do is scream at people who point out the fallacies and who say the truth, and they can say, well, you're wrong, you're not a scientist, you wouldn't know, and not only that, but you're dangerous, very dangerous, because you could keep people from getting their children vaccinated, and then, you know, the world would end.
Well, that's the message of Melinda Gates now from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, that anyone who questions the Bill Gates vaccination agenda might be hurting people. No, you can't question their campaign of mass vaccination. You might be causing death, they say. So those who are actually killing the children are saying that the people questioning them are the baby killers.
What I want to see at a big speech of Bill Gates in a giant hall is one of these kids from India, who's one of the 47,500 who've developed paralysis from the polio vaccine that Gates is supporting. I want to see one of those children come up the front aisle, down the center, in a wheelchair, and look at Bill Gates and say, thanks, Bill. That's what I want to see, because that's what's really happening.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. That's we need to have the confrontation of truth here. And there is this wave of polio across India today, or polio-like paralysis, but it's not being caused by polio in the wild. It's being caused by the polio vaccines. In fact, Aaron Dykes and Paul Watson did a story on that, posted on Infowars.com. So it's gotten to the point where the diseases are now being caused by the vaccines. We even had the Institute of Medicine admit that the measles vaccines cause the measles.
Absolutely. And I can tell you that in a story that I researched many years ago and got a tremendously reliable source to tell me, you know, in the early 1970s, the United Nations says, well, we wiped out smallpox in Africa with a vaccine, and it's the greatest thing that's ever happened to humanity, and so on and so on. Well, I know for a fact that after that campaign was over, there was a secret meeting in Geneva, secret meeting of the World Health Organization, where they decided, a committee, that they would never use that vaccine again. And the reason? Because it was causing smallpox. That was it. But on the other hand, they said, oh, we absolutely wiped out smallpox in Africa. A highly, highly dangerous vaccine that they put on the shelf, and they hid the facts from the public that they were actually causing smallpox.
But then at some point, they must have realized, wait a minute, this smallpox vaccine is great at reducing the global population. Let's keep the vaccine agenda moving forward so we can actually cause fatalities and reduce global population and just feed right into the eugenics global depopulation agenda, which Bill Gates openly admits he's a fan of. I mean, he's right out there.
He's right out in front.
All right, we got to go to a break. We'll be right back with more with John Rappaport, more about vaccines and other topics straight ahead on The Alex Jones Show. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
What we've got here is failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach. So you get what we had here last week, which is the way he wants.
We're talking with John Rappaport, an investigative journalist, researcher, about vaccines, seizures in children, and much more here on The Alex Jones Show this Sunday, April 22nd. This clock is throwing me off a little bit. I apologize to our listeners. But look, the news is hard-hitting. That's what matters, and our guest is right on the money. And we're going to be going into some of the details of not just vaccines, but talking about NSA surveillance. The NSA is now tracking 20 million transactions in total of the American people, your phone calls, your emails, other forms of data from other from Americans. And this is all authorized under the USA Patriot Act. And it's something that the NSA said they were not doing in the past. They said they don't monitor your email. It turns out they are. John Rappaport joins us from nomorefakenews.com. And John, What is your take on this just incredible expansion of the police state, surveilling every little detail of our lives and tracking everything that we are doing and what we might do?
Well, this was the agenda all along, Mike. I mean, the agenda was not to catch terrorists. The agenda is total control over the society so that they can say, okay, well, let's put these emails over here because these could be dangerous people. Well, what does that mean? Well, they can redefine that any way they want to. They can say, well, you're speaking out against the government, therefore you must be dangerous. So we put you in this pile over here, and we want to investigate, do a little background check, and so on and so forth. And, you know, I mean, I'm talking about it as if it's low tech, but that's basically what they're doing. They're filtering out these conversations, whether it's phone or email, and they're looking for keywords and phrases, and they're looking for what they consider to be danger signs because NSA is in charge of one of the main technical pillars of the New World Order. I mean, that's their job, is to keep everybody obedient, everybody talking about what they're supposed to be talking about and not talking about anything else. It's very simple. That's their gig. That's what they do. And they may as well come right out and say it. They may as well say, yes, this is what we represent. We're trying to keep you under wraps and repress anything that you might be thinking or saying that could be against the government, against the established order, against any government agency. In fact, when are we going to see surveillance, not only surveillance, but action taken? Well, you know, you spoke out against this mega corporation. And therefore, you know, we're going to institute some kind of a search warrant, or we're going to put you on a list.
Well, wait a minute. We've already got this. We've got a corporation basically declaring war on the state of Vermont. Monsanto has threatened Vermont. This is now a corporation threatening a state. I've got it in my pile here. Monsanto's threatened Vermont with expensive lawsuits if Vermont goes ahead and requires the labeling of GMOs in that state. And, in fact, Ronnie Cummins from the Organic Consumers Association penned an article that we published called "Is Vermont's Governor Surrendering to Monsanto?" So now we've got corporations strong-arming states of the union.
And don't you think that's going to be backed up by the NSA? I mean, could now say, okay, so let's focus on Vermont emails for a while. Let's you know, screw in the lens a little tighter, and let's see what the conversations are about vis-a-vis Monsanto, GMO foods, et cetera, because naturally, we, the NSA, are behind Monsanto's effort to keep labeling away.
All right,
That's how it works.
Let's take this, John, beyond the news. Let's go into the deep psychological reality that we're dealing with here. The human brain is not wired to recognize a slow creeping threat. The human brain is wired with the fight or flight response, dealing with an immediate life endangering threat. You know, a tiger about to eat you or something like that. Another person attacking you. The adrenaline starts pumping. You recognize the danger. You fight or you run. But the slow creeping tyranny seems to be happening without any psychological recognition. It's outside of the awareness of most people. Even it's gotten to the point where people like you and me and the entire InfoWars crew, we've become somewhat desensitized to the creeping tyranny every single day. The police state seems more and more normal, even to us, accidentally.
Of course. And, you know, the people who want to remain brain dead about all of this are quite willing to do it, as you say, because they don't want to get into the fight or flight mechanism. They want to pretend, I'm talking now about the sheep, they want to pretend that everything is pretty much okay. So what do they require? Assurances. NSA comes out and says, this is preposterous. We would never do this, or if we would, it wouldn't have any bad intention. It's just like when Obama says, yes, I can kill anybody I want to, but I would never do it. Are
right.
you kidding? That would be absurd. And so everybody says, oh, thank goodness. It's on the law books. He could do it. But it's just one of those quirks. You know, they pass a law, but they don't really mean it, you know, which, of course, is completely insane.
But this is, you know, this is what's happening. The psychology of this is very important to understand, where they say, we want the power, but we promise we won't use it. Remember when Obama said, I won't sign the NDAA, and he did. And he said, I don't want the arrest Americans section in it. But then it turns out he's the one who demanded it to be put in there. How many campaign promises has he broken? I want to shut down the secret prisons, and he turns out he expands them, and he gives more power to the government and the military to actually run secret prisons and secretly arrest Americans and interrogate Americans and deny them their due process. It's just on and on. There's no end to this. And what concerns me, again, back to my main point, John, is that the average American citizen, it's like the frog in the boiling water. By the time they wake up, it's going to be too late for them. They're already behind the curve.
You bet. Absolutely. Well, what do you think the job of the president is, really? The job of the president is to be a PR front man. I don't care whether it's Obama, Bush, Clinton, whoever. They're there to present a face to the public saying, hey, I'm just like you. I'm a good guy. I wouldn't do anything to hurt you. And everybody goes, well, I guess that's right. I mean, look at him. He's chatty. He can talk. He plays golf. He jogs. Whatever he does, he plays the saxophone. So he must be okay. I mean, this guy is not going to turn against me. Well, that's what a PR front man does.
That's
he
right.
assures everybody that everything's okay. Meanwhile, in the background, all of this very sinister stuff is going on.
This is why I think Disney movies are very deceptive, because they train. If you watch a Disney movie for kids, the bad guys always look bad. They wear black. They have a sinister mustache. They talk in a sinister way. You can immediately identify they're the bad guy. But
yeah.
In the real world, a lot of the bad guys are prepped for television. They've got the teleprompters, the makeup, the hair, the right shoes, the right shoe shine color. There's been all kinds of polls and surveys of thousands of people to determine the exact color and shape of the tie. Should it be striped or solid? So they're put out there as this wonderful looking good guy, when in fact they're the demonic evildoer that the Disney movies would tend to portray as a sinister, evil looking person.
You bet. I mean, who is the most sympathetic president we've had in memory? Jimmy Carter. I just like you. I like you, and I like you even more than I like you. And in the meantime, what's he doing? He's turning over the foreign policy of the United States to six guys from the Trilateral Commission. Right. And he's saying, it doesn't really matter because I like you and I really like you.
Wait, isn't that the slogan from 7-Up? You like it, it likes you. Jimmy Carter drinks 7-Up.
That's anyway. Exactly it. You see, that's the same technique. It's absolutely the same technique. And you're right. What we need from Disney, if you're listening, is we need a movie where the bad guy looks great. He looks terrific, and he acts really great, and then the good guy looks bad. Let's just turn it around for a while, make about 50 of those, and people might start to wake up.
Yeah, exactly. And I think look at what is really authentic. I think that's the key question. If you watch InfoWars, if you listen to Alex Jones, if you just look at what we wear, for example, you could tell this. I didn't spend a fortune on this wardrobe. This was my ranch shirt because I have goats and I have free range chickens and I take care of ranch animals. And I was actually on a tractor this morning before I came in here, literally working on the tractor before the show. It's authentic. There are no teleprompters here, whether it's Rob Dew or John Baum or anyone who's hosting, Aaron Dykes. There are no teleprompters. This is reality. This is real live thinking people who aren't puppets. That's the difference, where everything from the conventional media, from the White House especially, is shaped and sculpted to push the buttons of your psychology that will make you love what they're doing.
I think this is now turning against them because of the internet, because people are realizing just what you said, Mike. The people that are supposed to be authentic, who are the real phonies, they're relying on one script after another, script, 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 teleprompter, teleprompter. And when the teleprompter breaks down, they don't know what to do.
Yeah,
you know, it's just
literally
somebody
clueless.
Flipped the switch and they're just standing there. You know, what do I do now? What do I say? Because I've got nothing, really.
We should demand teleprompter-free representatives in Washington. Yeah, that's a great idea. A lot more with John Rappaport straight ahead. This is Mike Adams hosting for Alex Jones. We'll be right back after this break with much more. Stay with us.
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
We're continuing our interview today, and welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. This is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, filling in for Alex on this live Sunday edition. Alex is working on other projects today, but he does have an interview with Senator Rand Paul coming up in about half an hour. And that looks to be a really interesting interview where Rand Paul is going to be talking about what he calls a calamity. That's his word for it. The financial calamity that is ahead for us if we don't make some very important and urgent changes in our financial dealings here in this country. John Rappaport from NoMoreFakeNews.com is joining us right now, and we've been talking about a number of issues. I want to open the discussion with this, John. Isn't it interesting how the more we learn about the way the government really works, about the way the media really works, about alternative news like InfoWars, isn't it interesting how we can take that knowledge and then look back into the past and reanalyze, reinterpret events in the past with greater wisdom? For example, Oklahoma City. So Alex has been talking about this movie quite a bit, A Noble Lie, right here, which is a really very informative film. And I realized from this that back in, I believe Oklahoma City was in 1994, 1995, here it is. Back then, I remember believing the government's story when they said they found the axle of a truck, the truck that blew up, and they said they could read the vehicle number off the axle, and then they could locate the vehicle, and they found Timothy McVeigh based off of that. I remember buying that. You know, I was younger. I was like, okay, yeah, maybe the vehicle numbers are on the axles. Well, turns out that's complete fiction. There are no VIN numbers on axles of vehicles, and now we know that. Now we can look back into the past, and we can reinterpret that. What are your thoughts on this, John? And are there some other topics that we need to reanalyze now based on what we know today?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, Mike, because in 1995, I wrote a book called Oklahoma City Bombing, The Suppressed Truth. And what I did was I started interviewing people who were down there at the time. The full story was not clear. The new video, Noble Truth,
A Noble Lie.
A Noble Truth or Noble Lie,
yes, sorry. Yeah.
Is a more complete story. But I remember calling a reporter on the main newspaper in Oklahoma City, and I said, you know, somebody must have seen this building come down. Come on. I've been reading all these news reports and so on, and I don't see one witness who actually was on the street and saw the building collapse and was interviewed by the FBI or the police or whatever. And she said, yeah. So, and I said, well, don't you think that's important? Because, for example, suppose the building came straight down. That indicates that it was not a truck bomb that caused that horizontal damage, but there were interior charges placed on the structure, and it came straight down. She said, well, there was one guy I interviewed, and she gave me his name. It's in the book. She said, you could talk to him. And I said, so give me his phone number, and we wrangled, and I got his phone number, and I called him up. He denied everything. He said, no, I never saw it come down. I saw it after it came down. I called back the reporter on the Oklahoma paper, and I said, he just called you a liar. And she said, absolutely not. She said, I've got my notes here. I talked to this guy. He said that the building came straight down. He saw it. He was on the street. And he's never been interviewed extensively by the FBI. And that was the tip-off to me, that the whole thing was a sham right from the beginning. And that's how the book started. And, you know, when the Twin Towers came down, I wrote on No More Fake News. The first thing I wrote that morning was, look at the explosion. Look at the explosion, please. I don't know what's happening yet, but if you look at the nature of the explosion, you're going to find out something here. I'm sure of it. And, you know, a few weeks later, people began writing and talking about, hey, sections of this building just came falling straight down. How do you do that?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I remember I had a friend who was in the Army at that time, and he was actually trained in the use of explosives in the Army. And he did the numbers for me and wrote down the numbers of the how many feet per second of the blast wave and so on. And he said the Oklahoma City couldn't be from that truck bomb. And I didn't know what to make of it at the time. I didn't know. So what am I supposed to do? Well, now I know, and we'll be right back on the Alex Jones Show. Straight ahead, more on Oklahoma City.
We now take you live
to the Central Texas Command Center
in the heart of the resistance. You're listening to the Alex Jones Show.
talking with investigative researcher John Rappaport. This is the Alex Jones Show. Thank you once again for joining us. Mike Adams filling in for Alex today on the Sunday Live edition. And in just about 20 minutes or so, Alex actually has an interview with Senator Rand Paul. That's an interview you absolutely do not want to miss. It's hard hitting. Now, what we're talking about right now is how I think America has a heightened sense of skepticism today that did not exist in 1994, 1995 with Oklahoma City, even with the raid, the ATF raid on Waco, even 2001, the 9/11 Twin Towers and WTC-7. I think we have a lot more skepticism today. I think people ask more questions today. In a sense, I would actually say that InfoWars helps prevent false flag attacks because the corrupt elements of government that try to plan these attacks, and it's probably just some subculture of evildoers, to use George Bush's word, inside government who plan and plot these things, they got to be listening to this show and saying, how do we pull off an attack that Alex Jones and his network of tipsters won't detect? Because they can't get away with it anymore. And that's saving lives. That's actually defending life. So that's one more way in which InfoWars saves lives. John, your thoughts on the subject?
You bet, Mike. Absolutely. When I started watching InfoWars on a daily basis, it suddenly came over me. This really is replacing major media.
Sure it is.
I mean, it really is. It just doesn't seem that way. You know, it is. It actually is. And when you look at all the stories that are posted every day and the constantly changing stories, I mean, aside from being a highly professional operation, this site is breaking stories in profusion, one after another, that the major media absolutely will not cover. Well, I'll tell you one thing. If they did cover it, they could actually survive financially. They could, but they won't because they're right. Part of the machine dedicated to the lie, so they won't.
Well, let's be upfront about it. InfoWars is the watchdog, period. InfoWars is the watchdog. It is the whistleblower. The network of Alex Jones listeners and InfoWars viewers and readers, that is the network of people who are actually following the "if you see something, say something" slogan that Janet Napolitano says, except they're using it to watch government. Instead of spying on their neighbors and spying on their citizens, they're watching government and saying, what are you doing? And that's a healthy thing in a republic. That's a healthy thing in a democracy. That is the health of the state for the good of the people has to rely on citizens actually keeping an eye on their government. Would you agree with that, John?
When I grew up, Mike, we're talking now the late 1940s and early 1950s. If you had plunked down the Alex Jones Show in front of anybody then, they would have had a heart attack and died.
Why? Why?
Because all of a sudden, the truth would have come in such a tremendous velocity and acceleration. Because in those days, everything was a cover-up. I mean, you just accepted what the New York Times said as the scripture. That was your news. You watched a little TV news as TV came online. And that was your life. I mean, that's all you knew. And to even think, to even imagine that there were any cover-ups going on at the time, people wouldn't even know what you meant if you said the term cover-up. So I'm just saying to you, in my lifetime, how far things have come. Now to this point where you've got InfoWars, who is blowing the whistle on every major story in the world day after day after day. The mindset of people a mere 50, 60 years ago would have been stroking out, having heart attacks, falling down in the street. They wouldn't have been able to even comprehend it. That's how locked up everything
was. Well, because they were living in that fabricated reality. I mean, that you see the same thing today with people who are addicted to cable news, who are addicted to White House announcements, who all of a sudden, for the first time, you peel away the veil of secrecy, you open their eyes, you awaken them, to use that metaphor, and they see a piece of real news from the real media, which is InfoWars, alternative media websites like yours and mine and InfoWars.com as well. When they see that, they do freak out. They go into denial. You can see it with 9/11 when you talk about World Trade Center 7. You can see it right there. I remember Jim Mars in an interview with Jim Mars that I did. He said, how can two airplanes knock down three buildings? Yeah, come on. It's basic math.
Yeah, it's basic math. You're right, because I talk to people like you're alluding to here. And basically what they're saying is, if the government is lying to us, or CNN is lying to us, then where would we be? We wouldn't know what to do. So therefore, they couldn't be lying to us. I mean, this is what passes for logic now. We have to accept whatever what they're saying, because otherwise we would think that they're actually conspirators, and that would be psychologically so devastating that we couldn't handle it. Well, those people are now falling into the minority. They're actually becoming the minority.
That's right.
And the majority are people who are saying, are you kidding? This is the way reality is, and you better get used to it.
You know, that is so true. It's interesting. My own website, Natural News, over the years, it had attracted really more of a liberal, left-leaning audience because of the nutrition, the progressive nutrition and health angle. And then I started covering stories about Department of Homeland Security buying bullets, and I started covering stories about, Second Amendment, why Second Amendment is so important to us. And I thought I would lose a bunch of readers, and I didn't. So many people on the left are moving into Bill of Rights. They're moving into questioning government. Even they say now, Obama betrayed us. That's the left saying that. They see it now. It's so blatant, you can't deny it any longer, John.
No, you can't. Doesn't matter what part of the political spectrum you're on. And then those people are also waking up to the fact that the whole left-right struggle, is concocted, really, to keep everybody with bread and circuses and watching the horse races and the gladiatorial combat of these political parties that are really one body with two heads. And that awareness is growing to the point where people just shrug it off and say, that's ridiculous. That has nothing to do with the news. The news is a lot deeper than that, and all we have to do is go click Infowars.com, click naturalnews.com, and we'll get the actual news.
That's the amazing part of this, is now the truth can spread at the speed of light, the speed of, yeah, of electrons going down your Ethernet cable. And I think this has got to be what's behind the big push to censor the internet, CISPA now. But before we get into that, I know you have comments on that, John. Let me bring in this new evidence of a cover-up of a third weapon in Operation Fast and Furious. A new book claims that the FBI hid the existence of a third weapon recovered at the scene of murdered U.S. Border Patrol agent Brian Terry. The book is called Fast and Furious, Barack Obama's Bloodiest Scandal and Its Shameless Cover-Up. And this book lays out this evidence that points to an FBI cover-up. Now, again, back to what we were talking about, John, most people in America today cannot believe that Attorney General Eric Holder might be engaged in a criminal conspiracy cover-up to destroy the Second Amendment by running guns into Mexico. That idea is just so alien to some people, they just can't swallow it. But what if it were true? And there's more evidence pointing in that direction every single day.
Absolutely pointing in that direction every day. How long can a Holder keep saying, I didn't know, I found out later, much later, this was, not really in my area, I was busy, reading a book, whatever. This is preposterous, completely preposterous, that the Department of Justice had no idea that this was going on. I mean, if you stop and think about it, what an incredible operation this is.
Oh, yeah, it is incredible.
We're going to give these people guns so that they can kill people, and this is going to help us stop them from killing people.
Yeah, it's going to help the government clamp down on freedom. That's what it's going to do. John, we've only got about a minute left with you. Do you have any final thoughts in your segment with us here today? And by the way, a lot of great insight from you so far. Anything you want to add?
Thanks, Mike. It's great being with you always. Stay awake. Become more awake. See through more lies. The more you see through, the higher you go on the ladder of control, and you finally see what the people behind the curtain are doing.
Well said, John Rappaport from NoMoreFakeNews.com. Thank you for joining us today, John. I always enjoy the discussions with you. Stay with us here on the Alex Jones Show, folks, because straight ahead we've got something about Andrew Breitbart. Yeah, and Alex Jones with some comments on that straight ahead. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this break. Yeah, NPR has put out an article that Alex Jones references in a video. We're going to be previewing, well, playing it in full for you here. It's about a five-minute video coming right up here shortly. The article is from Tina Brown from NPR, who in ways compares Andrew Breitbart to Hitler's supporters. Huh? What, Nazi people? Come on. And I guess these people also say Breitbart wasn't assassinated, really? Yeah, he just happened to die of a heart attack the night before he was going to release an explosive secret video that he had told people was going to bring down the Obama administration. You think he really just keeled over and died from a heart attack? See, that's where that skepticism comes in again that we were talking about with John Rappaport in the previous segments. You got to be skeptical of not just government, but of everything. You should be skeptical of listening to me right now. You should be skeptical of everything you read on InfoWars, and you better for sure be skeptical of what you read on NPR or what you hear on NPR. Sometimes I've got family members who like to tune in to NPR sometimes when I visit them, and I hear it, and it's just pure propaganda to me. Every story is spin and propaganda. I can't find hardly an element of truth in NPR. I don't know where they get their fictions. They must have some really good fiction writers in the back room that dream up their news. It's quite fascinating. In any case, we're going to go to this video where Alex Jones comments on this in his own words and brings attention to this NPR fictional weaving of the story of what happened to Andrew Breitbart and who he was as a person. Do we have that video ready? Okay, here we go.
Alex Jones here with a report for InfoWars.com from my home office. On Friday, I heard this Tina Brown NPR piece when they re-aired it, because I like to monitor what the big tax-free foundations are putting out their so-called public radio. And I actually heard Tina Brown, who's also Newsweek editor, compare in a twisted way Breitbart to Hitler. And of course, Breitbart was Jewish. But the point is that she talks about writers from World War II that exposed Hitler, and a book called Hitlerland about it from war correspondents, and how great they were and how they were the greatest example of journalism, but then how Breitbart was the opposite of that. And before that, she'd been talking about Hitler propaganda and bad journalists for him versus good journalists. And then, oh, here's the bad guy. He's Breitbart. And I'll play a little bit of that in a minute if this audio doesn't reset like it keeps doing. But then there's this subject. The Daily Caller and others are like, oh, L.A. coroner, Breitbart died of heart failure. No foul play suspected. But then you read in to the article and you find out that it is a preliminary report, no trauma. Trauma. It says no significant trauma. So I guess there might have been some. No trauma, like knocked on the head. And governments and corporations have literally hundreds of chemicals that metabolize out. They can give you a poison that kills you 2 weeks later. My point is, he was set to release documents and video that day that he said would basically bring down Obama. So that's my point on that subject. The Daily Caller's like, you know, oh, Alex Jones said it was a conspiracy. I said, no one I know buys. No one I know buys, you know, the story out of hand. Everybody says it stinks to high heaven. Okay, so here's the article plugging Hitlerland. Does sound like an interesting book. And then she's like, oh, the good journalists that exposed Hitler versus the bad ones. And they segue. You can go listen to the whole report at NPR, Tina Brown's report on Hitlerland, and they segue into Breitbart. And here is that audio or part of it.
More recently, it's from the New York Times by the media writer David Carr. It's called The Provocateur.
That's right. Well, of course, you know, during Hitler's Germany, there were 50 foreign correspondents from America in Berlin, which is an incredible index of the golden era of journalism. What we have, of course, in the era of today with Andrew Breitbart, the blogger, the right-wing radical blogger who just recently dropped dead in the early 40s, was, of course, the absolute opposite. It's really the degradation, in a sense, of the
Did you hear that? Who just recently dropped dead? She says that with a little bit of enjoyment. And then she just goes on to basically imply he's like Hitler. I mean, that's what this whole piece is, in a very sneaky way. And then I was looking it up. She also compared Rick Santorum, regardless of what you think of him, to Judas Iscariot. This is the head of Newsweek. This isn't even an American, as you can hear. Nothing against folks with British accents. It's just, why do they have to import all these foreigners on CNN and the rest of it to shovel us condescending know-it-all garbage? So she does this whole thing on bad journalists versus good journalists and Hitler, and then there's Breitbart. You just heard it.
Journalistic ideals of a William Shari. It was the absolute opposite. Breitbart didn't report anything. What Breitbart did was, he was a provocateur. He was a death by a thousand tweets. He, was quite...
Oh, but you just call people Judas Iscariot. That means total betrayer of everything good. And you compare, the great journalist of World War II and say the opposite is Breitbart, and he dropped dead. And she goes on and on. Again, we've already used a little bit of this for fair use. We could play more, but go listen to the rest of it. It is really, really sick.
We to take the flying soundbite, any soundbite, and misapply it in its context and create an absolute mayhem for the person concerned, like he did for poor Shirley Sherrod, who is the obscure official in the Agriculture Department.
And again, out of hundreds of reports, they take one where Breitbart wasn't completely correct. The truth is, he broke major news, brought down Acorn, brought down all the corruption with the energy garbage going on and the payoffs, and just the incredible corruption of Obama. And that's why they hate him, and that's why they demonize him. I'm not saying he was perfect. I didn't agree with him on the pro-war stuff. My point is, his death was very, very suspicious, and they just go on to basically celebrate it in a piece about Hitler's Germany. Just amazing, amazing. You talk about sophistic. You talk about manipulation. You talk about death by a thousand cuts. This is just death by one big cut, and then celebrate the actual physical death. Alex Jones signing off for InfoWars.com.
Well said there by Alex, man. Yeah, great, great analysis of that. Did you hear that voice, the British accent of the voice there from NPR? We were talking about the Hunger Games earlier, and that's how everybody speaks in the capital, the corrupt capital. May the odds be ever in your favor. When they're launching the games to have these children murdered for their entertainment bread and circuses. That's exactly what they sound like. Once again, the Hunger Games is real. It's happening around us right now. Just incredible. Oh, man. Here's another quick news item for you before we go to the interview with Senator Rand Paul. That's coming up in the next segment. Breast cancer survivor handcuffed and thrown in jail over a mistaken $280 medical bill as debtors' prisons return to the U.S. This is actually from the Daily Mail, believe it or not. And here's a breast cancer survivor. Her name is Lisa Lindsay, and she received this medical bill that wasn't even for her. It was another mistake. You know, you're going to get a mistake if you go to the hospital, for sure. They're going to screw up something. If not your treatment, then your billing, for sure. And so she said, I'm not going to pay it, and they threw her in jail. Took her away in handcuffs. State troopers arrived at her home. Took her away in handcuffs, and then only later was it revealed that this was not her debt. Hey, they're just stealing your babies now in hospitals and shooting them up with vaccines and throwing you in prison too. Why not just throw you in prison for other people's debt? Straight ahead, the interview with Senator Rand Paul by Alex Jones. Don't miss that. A lot of breaking information in that interview coming right up. Stay with us. We'll be right back on the Alex Jones Show on this Sunday. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show live on this Sunday. Now we take you straight to an interview between Alex Jones and Senator Rand Paul. This is amazing. Listen in.
We are joined by U.S. Senator hailing from Kentucky, Rand Paul, and the freshman senator, as everyone has noticed, has actually been fulfilling his campaign promises to try to cut government and restore our constitutional republic, and he joins us from Washington, D.C. Senator, thank you for coming on with us.
Glad to be with you, Alex.
There is so much to talk about, but I noticed that you're trying to point out that Interpol is now operating inside our country with diplomatic immunity.
Yeah, I'm kind of concerned about having an international police force in our country with the ability, maybe, to extradite U.S. citizens and send them to another country. Egypt, as you know, over the last couple of months has been holding some American pro-democracy workers in their country, and they were going to try them on trumped-up political charges. And so a couple of months ago, I said, you know what, should we send $2 billion to a country that treats us this way and treats our citizens? So I tried to hold up their foreign aid, and as a consequence, I think partly of what I was doing, they released our American citizens. Then they came home, and then Secretary Clinton went ahead and released their aid. I wrote her a letter and said, you know, she shouldn't do it because these prosecutions were still ongoing right now in absentia. They're prosecuting them without being there. They also made the U.S. taxpayer pay a $5 million ransom for these Americans to come home, promising they would come back to stand trial. But then this week we've learned that Egypt has asked Interpol for international warrants. They have these red letter warrants that can be used anywhere in the world. And most people say, oh, that could never happen in America. We would never let that happen. But Interpol is doing this in other countries. Saudi Arabia asked Interpol to return a Saudi journalist from Malaysia who had said something about a Muhammad that they found offensive, and they were going to accuse him of blasphemy. Interpol picked him up in Malaysia and took him back to Saudi Arabia. He will now face the death penalty for blasphemy. But the scary thing is he's being picked up by Interpol, and the scary thing is what kind of authority does Interpol have in the United States? And President Obama expanded their authority with an executive order in December, giving them diplomatic immunity. So all of this concerns me.
Senator, we also saw just last year the South African UN summit, and they called for a global UN environmental crime tribunal where you will be arrested if you deny man-made global warming. And that made headlines in Europe, but almost no news here. So they're openly calling for this international power, and four of our Supreme Court justices have said that we should get our rules from the UN, not the Constitution. So I think you're right to be very concerned about this.
Well, you know, one of the interactions in the last couple weeks that was very, very telling was the interaction between Senator Sessions and Secretary Panetta in a committee in which Panetta said that if we go to war, of course we'll consult with the UN and get their approval. And Sessions asked him, he said, well, you know, isn't there a role here under the Constitution for Congress? And Panetta basically just kept going on about NATO, the UN, and then he finally sort of said, well, yeah, we would probably inform Congress of what we're doing. But never in there was there any understanding that they had to get approval or permission from Congress.
And, of course, you've spoken on the Senate floor about that, one of the few senators to actually be concerned about the Constitution being brazenly violated. And if anyone was confused by what the Secretary of Defense said and tries to come out and say, well, he didn't really mean that. We have the letter, as you know, last year where Obama responded to Congress with the Libya war and said, I don't need your authorization. I have the UN. And that brings me to my next question, Senator. Are you or others going to call for the House to begin impeachment investigations? I know Congressman Jones has introduced legislation that if Obama starts another war without congressional war power authorization, that they will then trigger that. But that's not moving very fast. I mean, this is extremely brazen, like Caesar crossing the Rubicon. If you or your father, who would get a lot more attention than Congressman Jones, were to call for impeachment investigations, at least to begin hearings on impeachment, then I think that might get the executive to stop saying it follows the orders of the UN, Senator.
Well, I think the first step is to stop him in his tracks. We tried very hard on the Libya motion. In fact, what we did on the Libya, when he went to war with Libya, is we introduced his own words. His words in 2007, when he ran for office, said that no president should unilaterally go to war without congressional authority, which basically just restates the Constitution. And good for him, that's what he ran on. That was part of his platform. And then he went around and did exactly the opposite when he became president. And this is not the first time a Democrat or a Republican has changed their mind once they became president. They sort of believed in limitations on the presidential power until they actually became the president, and then they believe in unlimited powers. But we will fight him tooth and nail. We fought him. We introduced his own words on the Senate floor and asked people to vote for it. But the disappointing thing was 10 people in the U.S. Senate believe in the Constitution and believe that the Congress should have to declare war before a president goes to war. We got only 10 votes, and they were all Republicans. Not one Democrat voted for the words of their own president when he ran for office.
What did you make of the CIA director a month ago? It was in Wired magazine, if you caught it. What did you make of him saying, yeah, we're watching you, we're reading your emails, we're building a giant NSA center, and then Congress said, we want to see the details of that NSA center, and Obama said, you don't get to see it. Since when does Congress not get to get details of the new NSA center that they admit is to read all our emails and listen to our phone calls illegally, Senator?
Well, I'd say the one good news as far as Big Brother snooping on you is that there is some pushback. You know, the SOPA battle, the battle over, you know, the internet and whether or not they could shut down different websites indiscriminately based on accusations without a day in court, without, you know, any Fourth Amendment or jury trial protections. You know, we won that battle and won it in a big way. And so there is a pushback. That was really the first battle since I've been up here that we actually won, and we won in a clear fashion because the internet, the grassroots community, really defeated the establishment. They were planning on passing that under unanimous consent, which means they were just going to push it right through. If I objected, they were going to roll right over me. And the internet woke up. People, a lot of people who listen and get their news, you know, from you and from InfoWars.com, that the internet rose up and as a power did stop them in their tracks. We're not winning all the battles, but there's going to be another battle over cybersecurity bills coming up, and we have to worry about the power that's being given to agencies like the NSA to snoop on personal information on the internet. So we aren't done yet, but I think it was encouraging when we beat the SOPA bill.
Well, it's good to know you're there, because we've got on the other side Senator Jay Rockefeller famously saying in committee, we would have been better off never inventing the internet. I mean, that's a wild statement.
The internet's the great equalizer, you know, because now people get their news and they look around for the news. And I think it's particularly young people now who are so cynical of all the politicians they see on TV. And I think this is why my dad has become so popular, is because they see him as a genuine voice, someone who they can believe and trust in. And that makes a big difference. And the internet has been the fountain of all that. And I think it really is leading to a movement out there that's neither Republican nor Democrat, but really wants a different way.
Certainly the establishment has to know they can't put the genie back in the bottle. People have had a taste of real choice in news and information and ideas. Freedom is catching on thanks to you, your father, and tens of millions of supporters across the planet.
Yep, well, that's one of my father's favorite lines as he's out on the trail, is that freedom is popular. Freedom brings people together. And it's one of the amazing things you see when you go to his rallies. You see people of all races, all economic levels. You see working class people. You see Chamber of Commerce types. But you see much more diverse crowd at the Ron Paul rallies, and particularly the youth, than you see at any Republican function. And it's what the Republicans, if they had half a clue, would realize nationally, is that Ron Paul is a phenomenon, getting 5,000 to 10,000 people at speeches, more than any other candidate. And they need to realize that they need that momentum, and they need that to win in the fall.
All right, this interview continues with Rand Paul here on the Alex Jones Show. It continues on the other side of this break. Stay with us. We'll be right back with the interview. All right, welcome back. You're listening to the Alex Jones Show, and the interview with Senator Rand Paul continues now in the second half with Alex Jones conducting the interview. That's it for my segment on the show. This has been Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, filling in. I enjoy doing it. Thank you for listening today, and continue to listen to this interview. We're going right to it now. Take care.
They need that to win in the fall, and I'm just hoping that they will do some outreach to him to try to get him to participate in their convention.
Speaking of your father, Congressman Ron Paul, who has said that if he doesn't win the presidency, he's going to retire. Texas, of course, is very sad about that, but the idea continues on. And undoubtedly, we're winning the war, even if he doesn't win the battle, in educating hearts and minds about the true constitutional system. But what is at the heart of the delegate battle and the broker convention strategy? Can you tell us if Paul doesn't win the full nomination, what they're going to call for? And can you put to bed these rumors, the latest one yesterday in the Seattle Times? It's all over the news that if Mitt Romney was to get the nomination, that there's discussions of asking you to be vice president.
Well, I always tell people if there's a secret plan for that to happen, it's so secret that nobody's let me in on it yet. So I kind of doubt that will happen. I do tell people to be considered to be the Vice President of the United States is obviously an honor. I mean, it is. And I know some people may not like hearing that, but to tell you the truth, it is an honor to be considered and to know that you could have some influence in the direction of which, you know, that the country goes. But I don't probably see that happening, and no one's asked me in particular or specifically about it. With regard to, you know, where my father goes, what the delegate strategy is, whether it could be a brokered convention, I think it's unlikely. I think now that Santorum has dropped out, unless something changes dramatically in the next couple of primaries, in all likelihood, Romney will collect the numbers necessary to get the nomination sometime in May or June. One of the things is that if you win five states, you get to get your name placed in nomination and you get guaranteed a position at the convention. And there's still some chance of that. Even though my dad didn't win five states, a lot of the delegations are not decided until you go through the state convention. They have county conventions, and they work their way up. And Ron Paul's done very well in Nevada, Missouri, Maine, Iowa, and a couple of the other caucus states. So there's an outside chance that he still wins five states, but I think that's one of the reasons that he'll go on probably giving speeches and traveling around and encouraging voters at least through the state conventions, which are mostly over in June.
Sure, it's a victory just to be there injecting real issues. Moving quickly through some questions in the 5 minutes we have left, Senator. TSA, they have now announced, Congresswoman Jackson has announced here in Texas, Sheila Jackson Lee, that they have undercover Homeland Security outside of the 10th Amendment, TSA now on the buses and the highways. We've known this is coming, but that's just as illegal as Obama taking orders from the UN. There's got to be some end to this craziness. Dave Mustaine was just here in town visiting me a few weeks ago, rock star from Megadeth, and he complained to me that his 14-year-old daughter got groped at the airport here in Austin. There's got to be some, you know, end to this. Can you call for hearings in the Senate? I mean, isn't it illegal from your constitutional research to have the TSA now on the streets of Texas?
I can't call for hearings. The majority party completely controls hearings. ISA can get hearings in the House and has had some. The interesting thing is what happened to you guys in Texas? I thought you guys were going to stand up to the federal government and ban the TSA from doing that in Texas.
The feds threatened a air blockade, military blockade, and the unanimous House then fell to their knees and said, here's our daughters and sons, start groping.
Well, we're going to continue the fight up here, and really becomes more complicated because this ends up becoming not just about personal liberty. It becomes about union power and the fact that the Democrats are big on creating new government unions because they're new voting blocks and new blocks of money that they can get, forced union dues to support their campaigns. So really, the TSA is one of the biggest government unions now. And so we've been fighting, you know, to privatize security, many of us, and would like to do that. We will probably propose legislation coming up that will do that, as well as some that will be less dramatic but would actually forbid them from doing pat-downs. We think the idea of random pat-downs is ridiculous, insulting, and really making no one safe. And, I think that if you made searches based on evidence of suspicious behavior or something like that, or basically had some kind of risk assessment done, then you wouldn't be doing this to elderly women, babies, children, the rest. The other thing that would make it a little better, not perfect, but it would be just to have a frequent flyer program of some sort. And I don't want the government running it, but if it were done privately and voluntarily, I think you could develop some kind of frequent flyer program.
Two final questions, Senator Paul. Number one, everyone has been impressed. Even mainstream media has been impressed that you could run for office for the first time in your life and be catapulted into the U.S. Senate, and that you have kept your promises and done so well and had such a senatorial, gentlemanly bearing and have learned the procedures and things. I mean, everyone I know across the political spectrum is saying Rand Paul, if Ron Paul doesn't make it, well, Rand Paul is definitely presidential material for the Republic. I mean, I know you don't like to toot your own horn, but I mean, are you starting to think more about running for president?
Well, I think it's too early to tell, and a lot of it, you know, depends on what happens with this election. So, you know, we'll wait and see, but I think also the voice within the Senate can be a pretty loud voice, and I'm definitely going to do everything I can to use the position of the Senate to fight for constitutional limited government, to really fight to fend off what I think is a coming calamity. If we do not address this debt bomb that's coming at us, we really are in for a bad way, and it may be something that hits us before there is even another presidential election. So we're fighting day in, day out to get people around here to wake up to the imminence of this problem. I've been telling people for a year there's a day of reckoning coming, and it's not something we're looking forward to. It's either something where we destroy our currency, and when you destroy a currency, it leads to chaos in the streets, and we don't want that to happen. All of these problems are fixable, though, and we have a wonderful country with a wonderful heritage, and there is an amazing potential locked up in our country that if it were unleashed and you allow people to freely interact and trade with each other, that we would once again be a dominant force in the world if we would just really believe in ourselves and believe in our heritage.
I agree with you. Speaking of our heritage, not having high taxes, Buffett, Warren Buffett, the biggest recipient of the banker bailouts domestically, that's McClatchy, Associated Press, it's a fact. He says raise taxes on millionaires or people making $150,000 individually or $250,000 and a couple. Well, he's the guy that wants that money out of the next bailout on record. I mean, this is asinine. Give us a brief comment on that, Senator, because I know you've got to go, and then what you're going to do on a balanced budget amendment.
Well, I tell people I'm getting sick and tired of hearing about Buffett's secretary. I think she makes more money than I do, and I think her assets are probably greater than mine. And so I'm not, too concerned about Warren Buffett's secretary. But I think the argument that if two people paid the same percentage in taxes, if he pays 15%, his secretary pays 15%, let's say she makes $200,000 a year and he makes $20 million a year or $200 million, he pays 1,000-fold more in taxes than she does. So the thing is you can have progressive taxation with a flat tax code. So the idea that the rich are not paying their fair share in our country is a lie. It is absolutely untrue. We have the most progressive tax code maybe in the world. Our tax code is more progressive than Sweden's tax code. So they need to just tell the truth on it. But the bottom line is I want the private sector, the pie that is the private sector, to be bigger, and the pie that is the government sector to be smaller. So I don't want anybody's taxes to go up. And if you're richer than me and you've got three cars and I've got a moped, I need to go out and work harder, and I don't need to take it from you. I need to encourage you to hire more people by allowing you to do better. And so I don't really look at people who are wealthy business owners and say, oh, let me drag them down. I look at them and let's say, how can we get the government out of their way so this creative person, man or woman, can create more jobs? So I look at it the opposite way, and I think there's enough people left in America who like the idea of the American dream, who like the idea of success. And every generation, there's somebody. I meet people every day whose parents just finished high school and weren't very successful, who are now successful in this generation. It doesn't always happen, but that has been the beauty of America, is that mobility. And the interesting thing is 60% of the people born in the lowest rung, the bottom 20%, move up out of poverty. 60% of millionaires the following year don't make $1 million a year. So people move up and down this social ladder all of the time, and that freedom to go up and down the ladder is what America's about.
Well, the crony monopolists, they know that when you raise taxes over time, it destroys the pie and impoverishes. They want the control, undoubtedly. It is so refreshing to talk to a senator who does not compromise and is just so real. Senator Rand Paul, thank you so much for the time today.